the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Tony Smith.
And your boy, Uncle Chap.
And there we go. It is a...
God, that song is just so beautiful every time I hear it. It gets the people going, too. I know everybody out there is grooving.
Oh, a Wednesday edition, a Metro Rooter Wednesday edition of Jaguars Today with a very special guest. You heard him introduce their Uncle Chaps. You know, I feel like we're at a point with the introductions for the show because of all the hype with this offseason that I'm hearing that Miles Jack and Jalen Ramsey intro like once a week, if not twice, and I'm fine with it.
Like, oh, I'm always good with it.
It gets me so hyped. Like, I'm not even a Jaguars fan. I'm just someone who covers the team. I want to see the team do really well. But even me hearing it, I get all hyped. I'm like, oh my gosh, they got Jalen Ramsey and Miles Jack. It's like every day I want to be reminded. They got Jalen Ramsey and Miles Jack in this draft, man. It's unreal.
Every time I see those tweets come back up of when Miles got hurt, and they're like, now the Jaguars are going to get him and Ramsey in the first and second round. And all the tweets from like guys from like PFF were like, no way, there's no way that's ever going to happen. And then it happened, and it was sheer joy.
Yeah, and I know for you, as you're coming over from the Texas area to visit Jacksonville this week, but for you, the experience obviously being not in Jacksonville anymore, but supporting this Jacksonville Jaguars team and watching really this offseason specifically for this team where the decision to keep Gus Bradley, continue with this regime, the money they were willing to spend in free agency, and they were willing to spend more than they wound up spending if Olivier Vernon was willing to come to Jacksonville instead of New York. And then the draft, just what has the general experience of this offseason been for you?
You know, for the first time, you could see it in Texans fans' face, like when I would wear my Jaguars gear out in Texas, and that they were getting kind of nervous. I've lived there for 6 years now, and you could feel it, that they're like, okay, Jaguars are coming. And I would wear my Jaguars hat in the gym, and different dudes would come up and be like, man, you guys got Ramsey now, you got Jack, you got so many guys and stacked up. So it feels good to not get clowned on or feel like the dumb little brother, you know, like that hanging out with the rest of the NFL big brothers.
Right.
You feel like you belong a little bit more for our fan base, and it feels pretty good.
Yeah, it feels like maybe the little brothers learned the right hook.
Yeah.
For the first time in a while. I mean, it's not like the Jaguars have always been the team that you could pick on. They basically just have been since Houston came into the league. They've been in that kind of position where if you're living out there, I mean, Houston's been more successful than the Jaguars since that team came into the league. So I can understand that. And I know, you know, we're watching, this is a week where Cleveland wins that first title in forever.
Mm-hmm.
And you're watching those fans, and I'm watching that celebration, and I'm like, I can't imagine city would be if they won a title.
Even when it was back in the day and we made just the playoffs, first or second round, the feeling in the city was just, there was no talk of it being a college football town anymore.
No.
It was clearly a Jaguar-centric town. It still is. And I've seen it, you know, since I started coming back after I moved from Japan. Now when I go through Jacksonville, there's more Jaguars hats and shirts than I've seen in a long, long time. And I've noticed it since I've been back this time. It's even more. And I mentioned to my wife, I was like, you know, people are wearing gear again, like in a lot of gear.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the city is just ready to explode, man. It's going to be awesome.
You can feel it.
Yeah.
And being here even last year during the season where they win the game in London, even if it was a game that never should have been as close as it was with the way that it played out, but they make the play. Bortles makes the play to Hearns, and you can feel kind of this momentum a little bit. For the first time for this young roster, you felt a little bit of momentum for them. And they come back home. They have the bye week, disappointing week against the Jets, where really they might have been the better team that day but found ways to lose, turning the ball over, just didn't make the plays they needed to. They find a way to win just a miracle of a game against Baltimore, which is still the moment that lives in my head from the 2015 season. But then it sets it up after the blowout of the Colts where it's like you're watching all the playoff standings and in contention, which is all anyone had asked for before the season started going into December. It's like, just put me on the board. I just want to still just see the logo on the screen when we get to December. And they got to that point, and then it kind of all fell apart. But you could feel it in the city. Even with just five wins, you could feel after every win, just the fans want to go 100% with his football team. They just need the football team to give him a reason to, and it feels like they finally have enough talent that maybe they can.
Yeah, and I agree, but I also think that the last game against the Texans took a huge amount of wind out of the sails for the entire season. Even though they did a little bit better and they were in contention, that last game against the Texans took it out. And I feel like it wasn't even the Ramsey pick. It was the Miles Jack pick that was like, man, that was the shot that the city needed, because you knew they were going to go out and get some free agents. And they didn't really, when we started the free agency talk, they didn't get the guys that you thought they were, the pass rusher that everybody had talked about for 2 years that we needed to really make the defense go. They didn't get that guy. They didn't get Vernon. They missed out on, forget his name, dude signed with Tampa.
Robert Ayers.
Yeah, they missed out on Ayers. And so you just felt like, man, are we going to catch a break? And then the break came. And then it came again in the third round, because that was a guy that was talked about in the second. Yannick was talked about in the second round.
Yeah.
Like, could have been a pick. So you really got what you could have been your first, second, or third pick, like top guys that you would have, all three of them.
Sure.
And then Sheldon Day comes too. And he's been a standout.
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty awesome. And I know I go back to draft night itself, that Thursday night of the first round of the draft, and I was down at the stadium. We were getting ready to do the draft show. And so Jeff Loggeman comes in, who's going to be participating on the draft show that night with us. And he gets there like an hour and a half, 2 hours before the show. So that means that I get an hour and a half, 2 hours to pick Jeff Loggeman's brain a little bit about football, which, believe me, if you guys think you enjoy the 2 hours on Tuesdays when Jeff's in talking about the tape, he probably gets really tired of me. Because when the microphones, like when we shut off the microphones, that's just five more minutes for me to ask questions.
Uncensored Jeff Loggeman.
Yeah, it's just five more minutes for me to be like, well, what about this play? What happened here? And it's me trying to pick the brain of somebody who knows it. So Jeff comes in, night of the draft, and he sits down, he's having a sandwich or whatever before he gets to go on air. And we're talking about, you know, what the Jags are going to do with that first round pick and the guys that he really likes and maybe some of the guys he thinks they should avoid. And he says, you know, if they're looking pass rusher, Bosa's fine, is basically what he said. Bosa's fine. I wouldn't be upset with a pick of Joey Bosa. I just don't know what he does that's all that special, was what he said. But he said, you know, this guy I really like is, how do you say this kid's name from Maryland? Like, is what he said. I was like, that Ngakoue kid or whatever? He's like, yeah, whatever his name is, that's the guy I really, really like. And the idea that the Jaguars got a player that there were some guys that thought really should be a second-round pick. I know for me, when they traded up the spot and I knew it was going to happen with Miles Jack, again, I'm not even a Jaguars fan.
Yeah.
I'm just a citizen of the city who wants to see the team do well.
Right.
And when they moved that one pick and I knew, I was like, it's going to happen. Like, I had people in my house, right, that were over there. They wanted to go out, and they were just doing whatever they wanted to do. I started screaming at everybody, get in here! I was like, it's happening! Miles Jack is going to be a member of the Jaguars! Do y'all have any idea how awesome this is? Like, this guy is worthy of being a top five pick. They might have got the best two defenders in the entire draft in a couple of nights. I mean, it was just this unreal thing. I was surprised when I was leaving my neighborhood that there weren't people dancing in their driveways.
See, mine was different. Like, I had set my clock back too far, I guess. And I was driving in, and my phone started blowing up because I was on my way back from eating on Friday night to go back home and watch the draft. But I had looked at the Eastern time, not the Central time. So
is day two, right?
Yeah, this round is day two. This is round two. And so my phone just starts like vibrating in my pocket over and over again. And San Antonio is like crazy strict, no texting. And I want to like look. I'm like, something big happened. And so I just do it. And the Jaguars trade up. We're going to get Jack. I'm like, no way.
Yeah.
So I'm like real life Mr. Crab meme and like real life while I'm driving down the road, like, oh my God. And I'm like, I smile so big. My wife's like, what happened? I'm like, we got Jack too. And she's like, okay, like she doesn't care at all, like couldn't care less. And I'm like, no, this is so great, it's so wonderful. And she's like, okay, can you just please drive and not get a ticket?
Yeah, well, you have no idea, like, honestly, they might have got the two best players in this draft.
And so I'm trying to speed home so I can like check Twitter and like see if I can get on the live stream to watch the reaction at the stadium. And now, I mean, it's just awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool. And the idea that again, when you're the team that feels like it's been beat down for as long as this Jaguars team has, and I talked about it earlier this week, but this idea of hope, right, and the ropes that have been thrown out to Jaguars fans, it felt like in the past, especially, you know, 6 or 7 years where it's like, all right, here's finally the thing that's going to get us back on top and get us going again. And then it crumbles, whether it's because Justin Blackmon just can't stay in the locker room, basically drinks himself out of the league, or it's Blaine Gabbert, turns out to be Blaine Gabbert, right? Instead of an NFL quarterback.
Or Justin Blackmon.
Right. It's all these things, right? And instead of that, this offseason feels like the culmination of 3 years of, wow, we may have built this thing the right way. For the first time since 96.
It's a strange feeling not to look at the waiver wire, like, every time somebody gets cut and be like, oh, yeah, that guy can come in and start and be, like, one of our top 4 or 5 players after he gets cut from a specific team. Seattle, you know, like, every time they cut somebody, be like, well, he could probably be a starter on
our team.
We? Yeah.
Let's keep the Broncos pipeline going, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Julius Thomas, Malik Jackson. I actually asked the guy, Mike Kliss from Denver, when we had him on earlier this offseason, it's like, whose contract is up next year? Like, that was my first question. Whose contract is up next year that's going to be a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars? Uncle Chaps joining us in studio today for the show. So if you have any questions for him, if you've been duped and just want to scream at him for a couple of moments on the radio, you can. 641-1010. That's also the text line driven by Duval Ford. If you want to interact with the program in either of those ways, you can. The fan feedback spotlight question of the day today, we're asking you simply, with Uncle Chaps in studio with us, who is your favorite non-Jaguars player follow on social media? So it could be Chaps, it could be anybody you want it to be. But non-Jaguars player follow on social media. We'll get to some of your answers a little bit later on. Continue talking about this Jaguars offseason. I know, Chaps, you had some thoughts about Luke Jokel and the way that he's being treated, not only nationally, apparently, by guys like Jamie Dukes, but by the fans here in Jacksonville as well. So we'll get into that as we continue along. You might be surprised about how Chaps feels about Luke Jokel next here on a Metro Rooter Wednesday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Well, that promo is going to live a long time. And whether we keep running it for much longer or not, I don't know. But, it's made me smile every time that I've heard it here in the last couple of days. As we continue along, it is a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today for all size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, industrial, septic systems, restaurant grease trap service, and much more. You get same-day service Saturday and Sundays included. The right people, the right equipment, serving Jacksonville since 1978. Just go to MetroRooter.com or you can call them at 904-695-1911. 1-1. Fat Tony here with you. Mike Dempsey still on vacation until next Thursday. So you still got another full week of me here on this show today, joined by Uncle Chaps, voice of the fan, today here on Jaguars Today. And I guess we talked a lot about the offseason there a moment ago, but what brings you back to Jacksonville here for a couple days, man?
Well, my wife is going to a conference for work, and so she was like, hey, do you want to go? And I was, absolutely. So we... And the conference that she ended up going to, there's only like one segment that actually interests her. Mm-hmm. So she was in the conference for maybe like 2 hours. And then the rest of the week, we just have vacation for free, paid for by her work. So shout out to my wife's work, which I won't mention on air.
Sure. But I know you're a Duval guy. Mm-hmm. You're DTWD, obviously. But are you from Jacksonville? Did you come by the Jaguars naturally? Like, how'd this happen?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Navy kid, so I was all around, but I was born at NAS Jax, and then my family, we moved to Italy, and then we came back to Jacksonville, and then we moved to Maryland, came back to Jacksonville, and then, so a lot of my elementary, middle school years were here, and one of the biggest moments of my childhood was when the Jaguars got the team, so it always just kind of stuck around. I remember, I used to get bullied all the time, because I would wear these, I don't know if you remember or not, but when the Jaguars first came into existence, they had these super cheap, I think they were made by Wilson, shoes that had like the original logo on them, and they just look god awful. They look like old people's shoes that you would see like walking the mall in the morning, just with a Jaguars logo stuck on the side. But I was like totally all about it. So I put those shoes on, went to Green Coast Springs or to Lake Asbury Elementary, and just got clowned beyond belief from those shoes.
Did you keep a pair? They might be worse now.
Oh, yeah, they might be. I kept them as long as I could until I couldn't take it anymore, and then I switched over to some Nike Air Flights, I think.
Okay. Okay, I got you. So, Navy guy, obviously, don't want to go any further without thanking you for your service. I know I see you around Memorial Day and these kinds of things, tweet out some stuff about your personal experience, and I'm not going to ask you to get into any of that here on air, but do want to thank you for your service. And
thank you. I just want to clarify that I'm not a Navy guy. My dad was. I was a Navy kid. I'm a Marine.
Okay, Marine, sorry. Yeah. But look, I do want to thank you for the service. Anyone who wants to see the backstory, I know you put up some of that on your Twitter account every year. Mm-hmm. So if they want to find out about that, they can. Uncle Chap, just go back in the timeline. You can find out that kind of information about you. I don't want to make you relive any of that here on air.
Yeah.
We're here to talk about much happier things as we talk some Jaguars football. I know when you came in today, you mentioned Luke Jokel specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And Jokel's obviously a lightning rod for the fan base here in Jacksonville. Has been basically since he got drafted. And he came in and had to start at right tackle. And then they traded away Eugene Monroe, and he came in at left tackle, broke that leg, and then hasn't been great at that left tackle spot. And everyone's like, well, he's the number two overall pick. We should have higher expectations for the number two overall pick. And look, whether or not they made the right pick with Luke Jokel, I don't know. It certainly doesn't feel like it at this point. There were better players in that draft, whether it be Ziggy Ansah or whoever they could have gone with that number two overall pick. But last year you said that you felt like week 17 really overshadowed what was an okay season from that guy. Is that correct?
Yeah, like if Jokel doesn't give up five sacks to the Texans, I don't think that we have as much fan nervousness about what's going on at left tackle. He's kind of like Tyson. You remember when Tyson was drafted way too high? But everybody kind of said, well, that was Gene Smith's draft pick. Not really Tyson's fault that he was overdrafted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the same with Luke. Because Luke's been, I mean, he's not one of the top four or five worst starting left tackles in the NFL. Like, I think he had five sacks before that game. Like, he gave up five. But his bad plays are just so, so bad that it kind of overshadows everything else. He's serviceable for the rest of the game, but he'll have those two or three plays that are just horrific. And luckily we have Blake that can get around that stuff. So, I mean, if Beecham's an upgrade, then I'm all about it. But I don't think that Luke is not the worst tackle in the world. And I think that we get kind of caught up in that last game where he legitimately looked like the worst tackle in the world. Like it was a guy that should have been on a 2012 roster. But he doesn't play like a number two overall pick. And really, it's very rare for a guy that's not Tony Boselli or an Ogden or somebody like that that is going to play to merit the number two overall pick. It's a really tough situation for a guy to be in.
We talk about the risks of the draft every year when we're preparing for it for that, you know, basically. Well, here in Jacksonville, let's be honest, from October until actual draft day has been draft preparation, it feels like, for the last several years. But last year being a bit of an exception, but they wind up winning five games. They have another top five pick. And it's even earlier this week during this state in football history, you know, I'm talking about a guy who's drafted number two overall, who's drafted seven spots ahead of Brian Urlacher, the same position that they both play, the same kind of spot. And the top five in that draft, the fifth pick was the only one that was worth anything, basically, in the league. And I think the NFL draft is like that sometimes, where we know the names of all these guys, but they're such unknown commodities when it comes to the transition from college to the NFL. And that's why GMs get paid the kind of money they do, is to make that decision. And ultimately, you make the right or wrong one, and if you make enough wrong ones, someone else is going to have your job.
Yeah.
And in Jacksonville, I think we've gotten so used to watching this team have to go back and continue to correct, you know, things that you felt like you should have answered. And I think that's where the frustration with left tackle comes in. It's, we spent a number two overall pick on a guy to play that position. I don't want 2 years later to have to be signing a guy in the offseason.
Oh, no doubt.
To play that position. And I get that frustration from fans. And honestly, on an offensive line, nobody's on more of an island than that left tackle.
Yeah, and I think we need to move past the point where we think that tackles in general are safe picks. Like, it's such a cop-out. Be like, oh, well, and it's usually because fans don't understand the position. I don't understand the real nuances of left tackle position. So where the fans see it like, oh, he didn't give up that many sacks in college, so he must be ready to go. It's a safe pick. And that's just not true. I mean, you look at Robinson for the Rams, like he wasn't a safe pick either. And Fisher, he's not doing great. He might not get the second contract with Kansas City, who went before Luke. And then you have a guy like Ziggy, who was the complete, who I wanted, by the way, and I'm
me
on
too.
The record for that. Like,
yeah.
He was a monster.
Yep.
But there's no such thing as a safe pick. So, I mean, I kind of feel bad for Luke. He had it rough.
No, he did. And, yeah, I was on the Ziggy Ansah train for that draft too. But I'm the guy, I always fall in love with kind of that physical athlete freak.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the guy I start pounding the table for. It was Miles Jack this year. I just pounded the table. It was like, Miles, we got to get Miles. And mm-hmm. I was the guy that on draft night even.
And then you got two freaks.
Right, I did. And, you didn't know if Miles Jack was going to be there in the second round. So I'm the guy that when they pick Jalen Ramsey, in my head I'm going, yeah, that's a solid pick. And then the other part of my head's going, aw. Like, we didn't get Miles. Like,
yeah.
Even with the knee stuff, I've really wanted Miles Jack at the number five pick, and it's not my job on the line, you know, that kind of thing. But I do think there some of the criticism of Luke Jokel hasn't been fair. Some of it hasn't been. I think a lot of it has been fair when it comes to Luke Jokel and the way that the fans talk about it and treat him. And I do feel like it's mostly because you just don't want to have to go back already.
I mean,
it's like going back and they're having to correct mistakes they made drafting in the secondary already, too. And you just don't want 2 or 3 years into this thing to have to be doing that already.
Can we talk about how beautiful the Beachum contract is?
Oh, it's wonderful.
That might be the most genius contract ever. Like, and the fact that more teams don't do that, legit prove it. Like, here, we have it right here. You play well, you get this other $40 million.
Yeah.
Like, amazing.
And it's even better than like what they did with Wisniewski, right? Where,
yeah.
Look, with Wisniewski.
Or even Derek Marks.
Right. It really was a 1 year prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Wisniewski, it's, and maybe Wiz just didn't want to be stuck in Jacksonville maybe for 5 years, even if he had played well.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't give him that option or a team option after that. But with a guy like Beachum, who is a young guy who looks like he's playing that left tackle position pretty well in the league during the times that he's been healthy for the last year and a half. The idea of giving him basically a 5-year contract, but
yeah.
with 1 year to say, are you healthy enough to really help us at this spot? I mean, really, the way they handled all the contracts this offseason has been really good.
I mean, they're essentially all 2-year deals anyways,
yeah.
with the guaranteed money being gone after a second, maybe the third year for a guy like Jackson. I think his is the third year after that, the money's gone.
Yeah. And Chris Ivory, people keep complaining about the contract. I'm like, it's a 2-year contract.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a 2-year contract. If you think he's going to see all that money, you're nuts.
And he's exactly what they needed.
Yeah.
I mean, there's plenty of games last year where you can run up the clock a little bit. I think that's going to be the biggest point this season, is what can we do if we actually have the lead and there's 5 minutes left? Are we going to be able to be the type of team that can control the clock? And I think Chris Ivory lets you do that a little bit better than Yeldon does. Nothing against Yeldon. I love
no.
him, and I think he's great. But Chris Ivory is the kind of back that can help you win games at the end of the game.
Dictate.
Yeah.
And it's something that they haven't been able to do. Even when the offense was rolling last year, they never really controlled games.
Mm-hmm.
Like the game in London should have been a game where the offense took control.
Yeah.
You know, you get that big a lead, it's like, all right, now we're just, this game's done. You know, and we're going to get on the field. A 2-touchdown lead in the NFL in the second half of a game should be enough.
But you didn't have that interior offensive line, and you didn't have the running back that could pound it.
No, certainly didn't. As the image of Toby Gerhart once, twice, three times, four times in that game is a lasting one, and it's why they go and get a guy like Chris Ivory, and even the Malik Jackson contract, even if it's 3 years basically that it's guaranteed on that. You felt like that was a really big number until you saw Fletcher Cox.
Yeah.
Right? And then it's like, oh! We went to the bargain bin for Malik Jackson. Like, the difference between those two contracts, they're both the same years, and the money is nowhere near the same for those two guys. And it's like, they actually got a deal on Malik Jackson.
To be fair, I don't think that Malik Jackson's the same quality of player as Cox either. I think he's probably
not quite that level.
I think you have 2 or 3 guys that are in Cox's range, and then Malik's probably in, like, the 7 to 10 in that position group.
I think he can be. In that range, though. I just don't know if Malik Jackson's
maybe
been given the...
He didn't
yeah.
have to do the pass rushing that Fletcher
yeah.
did either
yeah.
because you have Von Miller and you have...
DeMarcus Ware.
Yeah, DeMarcus Ware on the other side, too.
And Wolf, who they really like.
Maybe they think he can be that interior
yeah.
pass rusher as well.
And the guy that should be kicking himself is Derek Wolf.
Well, I mean, they must be thinking he could do it if he got $90 million. They're probably... He's probably going to be okay. He'll
yeah.
be serviceable.
He's going to add some pass rush to this team. I got yeah. a feeling they didn't just bring him in here to... stop the run on
yeah.
that Jaguars defensive line for that kind of money. Let's get out to the phone lines for the first time today at 641-1010. That's how you can get in. Reggie wants to talk a little bit about a Jaguars prediction. What's going on today, Reggie?
Tony, can you hear me?
I got you.
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm good. How are you, man?
Oh, man, I'm excited. I'm the champion, man. It's good to hear you, man. Thank you for being here. We rock, baby. We rock. Thank you.
Semper Fi.
Man, I'm so excited, man. The countdown is on. You say 39. I'm counting with you. Well, it's past 39 now, but let's count down, baby. I'm so excited. I'm just happy that that we have a new face here now. We have new young faces that want the mic. It ain't the old vets. It's the young cats, man. They're hungry. They got the blood in them, man. They like the sharks in the water. They want what they see. They have the tunnel vision. And this is the team lead. And if we just go out there and just play team ball, solid team ball, we can win these games. And the thing about it, the talent will show on the field. But one thing about it, we got to take care of Tennessee. We got to take care of Indianapolis. The main thing, we got to take care of the football like it's our own baby. We got to take care of it. Other than that, man, y'all take care of yourselves.
All right, Reggie, appreciate the call, man. I think the count's actually at 33 days now. Until training camp's going to get opened up for the Jaguars, if I'm doing the math correctly. I think that was last Thursday that he said 39.
Yeah, I think so, too.
So 33 days until we're ready for training camp, which is not a whole lot of time. Obviously, it's going to go quick here over the course of the next 5 weeks. And look, this is a team, they haven't played a home playoff game since 1999.
Mm-hmm.
Let's win the AFC South.
Yeah, man, let's do it.
And it's there for the taking. It's not like... I think when you look at the division and you split it up into offense, defense for all four teams, right? Like the unit among those eight that you probably feel the best about is the Texans' defense. Like that's the most known commodity of any side of the ball in the division. So the Jaguars' offense, honestly, may be number two at this point because the division is so shaky with everything that they're doing. We saw Luck was terrible even when he was on the field last year. He was still on pace to basically have the same kind of year that Blake Bortles wound up having, by the way, but didn't look like the Andrew Luck that we had gotten used to. We're not sure what their backfield's going to look like. All those questions on the offensive line. So maybe the Jaguars and Colts offense are close, you know, but I think you look at it and it's that Texans defense. And beyond that, it's a bunch of question marks, but it feels like the talent swings towards the Jaguars, at least if they're healthy, with what you saw them do on offense last year and this influx that they're going to have on the defensive side of the ball.
Oh, no doubt. And I think that you look across the AFC South, you have maybe one wide receiver who's better than a guy that we have, and DeAndre Hopkins. I think DeAndre Hopkins probably the best wide receiver in the AFC South.
Yeah, he's a top five guy in the league,
yeah,
probably.
I think so, too. And yeah. I mean, that's no slight to Allen Robinson. Hopkins is just a monster, and so is Robinson. But and then I think Andrew Luck and Bortles are kind of a wash. They're the same type of guy. I mean, the things that Luck's really good at, Blake's really good at. And if Blake's really mastering the offense more this year, like Greg Olsen says he is, and he can control the line more, do more two-minute drills, I think that you can ask Blake to do everything that you would ask Andrew Luck to do.
So. No, I agree with you, and I'm curious to see how it's going to play out because I have major questions still about that Houston offense. I don't trust Brock Osweiler yet.
Yeah, no. There's not a running back that's better than Chris Ivory or Yeldon in the AFC South.
No.
I mean...
They got a lot going for them.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, this Jaguars team has a lot going for them and an opportunity just... We haven't seen them take advantage of an opportunity in such a long time that it's you almost feel bad using the word. You know, it's like, oh, they got an opportunity. Like, and you just don't expect them to grab onto it at some point. And maybe they surprise us and fulfill some of the expectations that I know a lot of fans have for this team this year.
It's built.
We'll get back out.
Oh, God.
We'll get back out to the phone lines here in just a moment. Uncle Chaps joining us here on the program today. It's a Metro Rooter edition here of Jaguars Today. Back with more Jaguars talk. Your phone calls next here at 641-1010 on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I'm Dan Scuda of your Jacksonville Jaguars, and you're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Dan Scuda. I'm curious to see what his role is actually going to be for this Jaguars team this year. I know when they brought him in last year was to play that strong side linebacker spot, the auto, whatever the heck you want to call it in this Jaguars defense. Maybe add a little bit of pass rush for this team as well. And whether it be injury or just opportunity, didn't seem like he got the opportunity to do much from the pass rush spot at least. And I don't know where that's going to come from this year. With all the bodies it feels like they have potentially to throw at, especially that NASCAR package or whatever the heck you want to call it on third down.
The weirdest name. Why does everything have to be an O? Just can we stop it, please?
You don't like the auto?
I don't like the Leo, the auto, the
the Lotto now.
Anything with an O. Just please stop. Can we just start calling them Sam and Mike again?
You can call them whatever you want. They're going to call them the auto and the Lotto and the Leo, which is just the rush end. It's kind of a, as we had the argument a couple weeks ago with a guy, we saw the article with Dante Fowler Jr. and they were calling him a linebacker. And we were like, well, he's a defensive end, so this whole thing is stupid if you're going to call
ridiculous.
Him a linebacker,
yeah.
Right? And then we have people like texting the show. He's like, well, technically he's a buck linebacker in this the hybrid 4-3 defense. And I'm like, all right, clown, you're that kid that had to be like the smartest guy in the room the
well,
entire
actually,
time, right?
Well, actually.
Right.
Exactly.
I mean, come on. The guy plays defensive end.
He does. That's been the position forever.
That's what he plays. He plays that Leo spot. Does he play it a little bit differently than maybe most teams play that spot? Yeah, he does.
Yeah,
but he's not a linebacker. He's a defensive end.
Yes.
And Ryan Day was thinking if they have him standing up outside of Dante Fowler Jr., he's not a defensive end. He's a linebacker.
That's how it works.
Yeah, that's how it works. And every now and then there are defenses where they ask guys who play defensive line to drop back into pass coverage. We call it a zone blitz in the NFL. It's been around for quite a while. Where they ask guys occasionally that play defensive line to cover a spot.
After watching the Jaguars last year, I don't know what you mean by the term blitz.
Blitz. Okay. They felt so uncomfortable every time they brought a blitz. It was always telegraphed. Like, you could be sitting up in the stands, you'd be like, all right, here it comes. It's coming from this side.
Well, Aaron Colvin being your top sack guy.
Yeah,
your top blitzing guy.
If I can stand up in the booth and tell you where the blitz is coming, where the fifth guy is coming from, you know, 10 seconds before the snap, then there's no way that Aaron Rodgers doesn't know.
Yeah.
You know, like it's that kind of thing. And I know fans complain all the time about, well, I could call the plays for the Jaguars, you know, that kind of thing. And I don't think that was completely fair last year. I thought they mixed it up pretty well with Greg Olsen in the offense. But I do think defensively they were so uncomfortable when they got in positions where they felt like they needed to bring five or six that they telegraphed what they were doing. When they needed to bring five or six. And I think you've seen it in the OTAs and minicamp to this point. In the offseason, it's been a focus for this team to get these guys more comfortable with, look, third down was an issue for us last year. We have to be comfortable finding some way to get after the quarterback. And if that means we need to be comfortable sending five, then by golly, we're going to be comfortable sending five this year.
Yeah, and a lot of it was personnel. They didn't really have a whole lot of guys that could have, even on the blitz, get home. But you would have liked to see it. I mean, some of those comments that O'Brien made, that zero blitzes on third down that were longer than 7 yards or something like that, is unbelievable.
Yeah.
In today's NFL. And you saw it. I mean, you almost knew that it was third and 12, like, okay, here comes a little bubble screen and they're going to pick it up because we're not sending anybody. Everybody's going to drop back in coverage. It was awful, awful to watch.
It really was. What's up, Tyler?
Do you remember that Sports Illustrated article from the week after the season ended last year? It was about how the Texans coaches prepared to face the Jaguars and how they had some tendencies they pointed out. One of them was they realized that the blitz percentage for the Jaguars on third and short was 0%.
Yeah.
Those little tendencies they pointed out in the Sports Illustrated article right there. It was pretty obvious. Jags defense was predictable.
It was about as open trolling that you're going to get from a head coach to another head coach.
They felt so comfortable having SI writers in the room with them preparing for the Jaguars, like it was obvious that what the Jaguars do.
That was my most upset moment of the year. That, and then at the end of the year when Poslesny said that it would be nice to have Gus Bradley in the defensive room. When he said that, I was irate. Like, how are you defensive head coach and you weren't in the room?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that kind of stuff is frustrating. And I know if it was me calling the plays and I knew I could get the kind of rush that we got with our front four in Jacksonville, I wouldn't blitz on third down either, saying with complete sarcasm. Like,
yeah.
There's,
are you okay?
No,
you need another cup of coffee?
There's no way that I wouldn't be blitzing at times with this team last year. And, again, it just looked uncomfortable when they needed to. And hopefully that changes this year. I know it feels like there's a bit of an attitude adjustment. With Todd Walsh coming in as the defensive coordinator, it feels like maybe Gus Bradley is a little bit more hands-on with what's happening on that side of the ball.
And just the personnel's ability is, I mean, with Gibson back there now and Jack and Ramsey,
sure.
The speed to make up for mistakes if they don't get home on a blitz is a lot more than it was last year. And Prince being out there, I mean, you just have cornerback secondary speed and the back of the front seven. The speed there is just so much more than it has been in the past. I mean, I can't imagine
sure.
how the Pause being able to come off on third down and have Jack Roman there and not getting eaten alive by every tight end in the league is going to be going to be a nice.
Even if that's all you're asking him to do,
yeah,
on that third down is you see the tight end, cover him.
Yeah, just make sure that guy doesn't get the ball.
Yeah, if it's that simple for him at times this year, especially early on in the year, I'm fine with it. And it feels like, look, Telvin was supposed to be a guy that was going to take some of that pressure off. It just hasn't looked quite as good with him covering the tight end as you wanted it to.
He's just so good at coming up and getting the running back, though, too.
Right. He's so quick, and you know, the idea of those two guys being able to be on the field together, like you said, so much speed. And really, the best pass rusher they had on this team 2 years ago was Cindric Marks, mm-hmm. and he wasn't available to him last year. And you felt the difference on the interior of that line. When they had those third downs where it may have been Marks that disrupted something, they didn't have anybody that was disrupting anything like that in the middle of the defense. Roy Miller had an exceptional year for a guy playing his position, but he's not a guy that's going to be on the field on third down. You know, that's not where he's helping you. He's the reason that you're one of the best teams in the league last year on first and second down. He is a big reason for that. He's not going to help you on third down. Jared Odrick isn't a guy that's going to help you on third down. Those two guys help you against the run. They're not going to be guys that you bring in even to help you with the pass. So the idea of bringing in Malik Jackson and getting Cindric Marks back and those two guys being able to be on the field together.
Yannick,
hopefully,
Ballard.
Hopefully the quickness of a guy like Sheldon Day pays dividends for this defense as well. They have so many more options when it comes to trying to figure out
any options.
Right. To put it together and get some pressure on a team. But you're right, this team hasn't had options in forever.
I mean, the past 3 years, if a linebacker got hurt and the guy that they picked up off the street was going to be starting, you know, I mean, the depth that they've grown has really been incredible. You have guys that Marks was a Pro Bowl caliber player. Now he's coming off the bench. Like, that says something.
Yeah. Like I've said, Marks is coming back to a different world. You know, this is a guy that 2 years ago was the best player on this roster. And he's coming back now for the first time really being completely healthy. And he's we got to find what kind of role we want to have for Cindric Marks.
He might be the eighth or ninth best player on the defense now.
Right. I mean, it's just a completely different world. And it's that kind of picture that you're like, wow, look how much they have improved in just a couple years. And every now and then, just to remind myself, I'll go look at like that 2013, 2014 roster on like our lads or something and be like, 2013 especially, you just look at it and go, they played 16 games with this.
You know, I recently got an Xbox One for the first time in years and played a video game, and I just got an old copy of Madden. I was like, everything's going to be new to me.
Uh-huh.
And so when it first loaded up, I played the Jaguars versus the Titans. All right, so Chad Henne's lined up at quarterback, and the starting wide receivers in that game was Cecil Shorts and Ace Sanders. When that came up and I was looking across the line, I was like, oh my gosh. Like, the difference of talent from Cecil Shorts III being a starter and Ace Sanders, who didn't catch on anywhere else.
No.
To having Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns, who are both representing the NFL Top 100, Julius Thomas, Chris Ivory. I mean, that's an incredible upgrade.
No, there's no doubt. Absolutely no doubt about it. And I do. I look back at that and I go, holy cow, they played 16
games. That 2013 defense was terrible.
Yeah.
And I'm really embarrassed that I was like, we're going to win 7 games that year. That's how homer I am. Like, oh, man, we got Cecil Shorts. Have you seen the guy? He's incredible. I mean, granted, he's not healthy that often. But
oh, the things fans convince themselves of.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why off-season like this, they kind of get you nervous a little bit, too. It's like, yeah, this isn't the first time that I've felt Jacksonville trying to convince themselves that it's here. You know, it's not the first time that I've felt that kind of energy in the city. I think it's a little bit different this year as far as the feeling of it. And I think there's even more kind of cautious optimism than there has been in years past. But I think there's a lot of people who believe, and I think there's a lot more reasons to believe in the 2016 Jaguars than there have been.
I think every time you see clips of Jalen running at full speed on the sideline, the optimism comes back a little bit, because that was a big crushing blow for about 2 or 3 days, thinking that Jalen might be hurt for real.
Yeah. No fan base in the league knows more about the meniscus in a player's knee than the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah.
After dealing with Jack and Ramsey, not only going through the draft process, but obviously after Ramsey got here injuring that knee, but he looks like he's going to be completely fine by the time we get to training camp here in 33 days, did we say? 33 days away from that actually taking place, training camp getting started. We got this state in football history. We got the Honda driver on the NFL coming up next as we continue along. It is a Metro Rooter edition of Jaguars Today here on this Wednesday. Uncle Chaps in studio with me, Fat Tony. We'll be back with the state in football history, the Honda driver on the NFL next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented by Dr. James McCaw's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or if you're just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCaw's office at 904-620-9225. Dr. McCaw is a certified Invisalign provider. In the meantime, you can visit jamesjmccaw.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services, or again, give him a call at 904-620-9225. This date in football history, the Professional Football Researchers Association, formed in Canton, Ohio in 1979. What is that exactly? It's still a group of guys who exist to preserve the history of the game of football. They have a bi-monthly magazine titled Coffin Corner. They are the ones who collect like all the old like game programs. They want a game program from every football game ever played. They archive a bunch of stuff. They try to get like the box scores from every game. So going back to like football in the 1920s, they want to try to continue to collect those box scores, and good luck to them on that quest. A couple of notable birthdays: Champ Bailey, 38 years old today, 12-time Pro Bowler, 3-time first team All-Pro. If you go to Pro Football Reference and you look at that statistic basically of the career similar players to Champ Bailey, how about this for a list of guys: Aeneas Williams, Rondé Barber, Charles Woodson, Mel Blount, Ronnie Lott, Paul Krause, Mike Haynes, Willie Brown, Mel Renfro, and Ed Reed, the guys that he is similar to in his career. So if you have any doubt, yes, Champ Bailey will be in the Hall of Fame sooner rather than later. And Kurt Warner, the other notable birthday today, 45 years old, 4-time Pro Bowler, 2-time first team All-Pro, and a hero of the Jacksonville Jaguars, because thank goodness that Kurt Warner can call himself a Super Bowl champion, because it came at the Tennessee Titans' expense by 1 yard. The Rams won a Super Bowl and, of course, followed that up with a loss to the New England Patriots, and everyone's been miserable in the AFC ever since, with the Patriots beginning their dynasty basically against those St. Louis Rams. That'll do it for this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, guys, Adrian Peterson is now 31 years old, and players across the 30-year-old mark start to think about when they call it quits. Some like Calvin Johnson, even in their career, many years before people expect. Well, Adrian Peterson told ESPN that when he does decide to retire, it'll be due to the mental aspect of the game that drains him and forces him to hang him up, rather than the physical side. He said, training camp, going through the grind, OTAs, all like that, that will be definitely be the deciding factor for me. Physically, body-wise, I'll be good. It's just mentally, like with OTAs, I'm out there practicing, I'm going, I'm putting in work, but it's so repetitive that it's more suited towards the young guys and getting them into the system, and it gets kind of boring. So AP may be hinting at a possible early retirement. I don't see that being a possibility with AP at all.
Or just wanting to tell Minnesota, I'll see you in August, September.
Just pull Brett Favre and just come back after OTAs.
Yeah, you guys,
let him. Why not?
Come back week one.
You guys don't need me in training camp, right? Like, we know what this is. We know the relationship we have. We don't need any of this, all this crap during the preseason.
Speaking of Cleveland, former Browns running back and Jaguars running back coach back in 2010, Ernest Biner joined Mike and Mike and discussed what the Cavaliers title means to him, a man responsible for one of Cleveland's most infamous sports events, the fumble, and here's what Biner had to say.
To me, it was a sense of healing. It's really freeing. It's liberating. And I think it takes a whole lot of pressure off of a whole lot of people that was there. You know, you saw how, you know, LeBron's reaction to, you know, to the championship. I mean, the ugly face crying that he was doing, man, that was the pressure. So to me, I mean, it's just a liberating experience, totally, and very proud of the city of Cleveland, what they've gone through, and also the championship that has finally come home.
Robert Griffin III is still trying to work his way into becoming the starting quarterback in Cleveland. Not a whole lot of competition in front of him, or I should say behind him, actually. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler says it's not necessarily a lock that RG3 is the starter for the Browns this year. And that is the click of death that we all know about Tony. So we're going to go ahead and skip the Jeremy Fowler cut. He basically just said it's not a lock yet. He's the leader in the clubhouse right now, but the dude's got a lot to prove.
You know, I was chuckling because, you know, Cleveland, we got the pictures up on ESPN right now of the parade going on, the championship parade for the Cavaliers in Cleveland. The Indians don't look like they're going to get much done here during the baseball season. So the next big thing in Cleveland is the Browns football season. And I'm just laughing at the idea that the hopes of the Cleveland Browns football season rest on RG3.
Oh yeah, man!
Like just the
well, Johnny's working his way back right now. He's getting his mind right. He's trying to come back to the team.
He's got
to
relax. He's too high strung.
I guess
Manziel needs to just relax.
I guess like just the idea in my head for a city that's gone through what Cleveland has gone through, that the next major thing in sports that's going to happen is the Browns led by RG3. Like, you go from being on top of the world, we finally broke through, it's been 52 years, the Chosen One came back and King LeBron, and he brought us a championship, and now it's the Browns' turn. Like, it's so funny to me. You go right back to being the sadness factory. You know, you get a couple days, maybe even a couple months of real joy out of this championship, and then you're going right back to being the city of Cleveland.
And since I bragged about wanting Ziggy in 2012, I think I should also say that I was really on the Manziel train here for us, and your boy got that one wrong.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty safe to say I was wrong on that one.
Yeah. I can remember the conversations about Manziel and be like, oh, that'd be fun. You know, if they drafted Manziel, that'd be a lot of fun. And then they obviously took Bortles, and you're sitting there going, who from what now? Like, kind of like that was the reaction, even the minor little chorus of boos when Blake Bortles' name was called, because I think even guys who wanted quarterbacks generally were leaning towards the Manziel end of things. Why not bring in the most exciting
Teddy.
Player?
Teddy was a big one, too.
Yeah. The Teddy stuff was hilarious.
It was awful. It made me hate him.
I do have a late addition here for the Honda drive around the NFL.
Oh, what do we got?
Late addition, former Miami Dolphins wide receiver Devine Best is facing charges after allegedly getting into a standoff with police at his suburban Phoenix home. A judge ordered Best to be released on $2,500 bond after his arrest on one felony count, each of endangerment, unlawful flight, and failure and to stop for a police officer, according to charging documents. Best was stopped in Gilbert, Arizona, late Sunday for driving without his headlights on. The documents say he pointed his finger like a gun at officers and moved it up and down, mimicking a firing motion for a gun, you know. And
for real?
Like and Shooter McGavin?
Yeah, and police didn't, you know, police obviously weren't joking around at all when it's dark outside and you have a motion of a gun shooting. So things got a little heated between Devine Best and the police.
I can't believe anyone's still that like, are you really going to mimic a gunshot at cops?
Police then say Best fled to his home where he waved a knife while still in his car, and documents say he refused police commands and then walked into his home with the knife.
Oh, that's brilliant. So you fake shoot a gun at cops, then you pull out a knife, and then think that you're just going to walk away. Because that's the way the world works.
Allegedly.
What, like, where are you living right now? Like, and again, we're an NFL show, obviously, but just because we're kind of on the legal side of things here for just a moment, the Alabama football players, the charges that are not going to be coming to them because the prosecutor in Louisiana basically came out and said that he doesn't want to ruin two young men's lives that have been putting in so much work in the weight room.
They were in the air conditioning.
Is essentially what he said. Like, they're working too hard to play football for me to go about trying to ruin their lives. Well, one, Mr. Prosecutor, you wouldn't be the one ruining their lives. They would by having made the decisions that they made to get to the point where you feel like you have a case to make against them. But on the other side, I kind of appreciate that for the first time, a prosecutor's being honest about why they're not prosecuting.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, oh, I'm not doing this because these guys are really good at football. So I'm not going to touch this one. At least the guy's willing to be honest with me about why he's not going to pursue something like that. As stupid as it is and as just insane as that kind of thing is. And that is the Honda drive around the NFL. We're going to be joined talking a little bit of Chicago Bears football here in just a moment. Is Adam Hogue? Hogue. I got it right,
correct,
right?
Yeah.
Not Hoji? Not Haji?
Hoagie?
No, nothing like that. Adam Hogue going to join us next as we'll talk a little Bears football as we continue to get ready for the Jaguars' upcoming season. We got 33 days until training camp gets opened up, which means we have something probably like, what, 9-10 weeks? Something like that? Until they're playing real football? Potentially. I think we're like 8 weeks away from the high school season getting started, so 9 weeks away from college, so probably 10.
Let's just do preseason. We're like 5 weeks away.
5 weeks away from preseason. That works for me. from like the Hall of Fame game.
I'm no mathematician, though, so that could be completely wrong.
Well, if Hacker was in here, he'd tell me how many days until like the Hall of Fame game or whatever, because he's got those kind of numbers just rolling around in his head. But we continue our tour through the Jaguars' 2016 schedule. Next stop is up in Chicago with the lowly, lowly Bears. Hey, Jacksonville, you can still feel better about a handful of teams in the league, potentially the Bears. Maybe one of them. We'll talk to Adam Hogue about that next. Uncle Chaps joining me here in studio today on a Wednesday, Metro Rooter Wednesday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
92.5 FM.
All right, continuing our tour around the Jaguars season, the next stop up in Chicago as we welcome in Adam Hodge here. Hogue. See, I knew I was going to do it. Adam Hogue from WGN joining us at Adam Hogue on Twitter, H-O-G-E, as we talk a little Chicago Bears. What's going on, Adam?
Hey, what's up, man?
I'm sure I'm not the first one to ever screw up your name. I do apologize.
Not the first, not the last, that's for sure.
As we get set to talk a little Bears football, I guess it starts in the same way every time you do one of these interviews. The expectations for Jay Cutler, who at one time was one of the three or four highest-paid quarterbacks in the National Football League, certainly hasn't lived up to that kind of hype with the Chicago Bears in the last couple of years. What are the expectations even at this point for Cutler in Chicago?
Well, I think he did live up to that hype last year. I thought he had a really good year. The year before was not good, and that was the first year under that big contract he got. Last year was much better, and when you start seeing other guys, for instance, Brock Osweiler get the money he got this offseason, by comparison, you know, I'd rather have Cutler at the money he had because he's much more proven. And his deal actually tends to get a little bit friendlier in the coming years. So, I think the expectation is for Jay specifically just do what he did last year, which was play pretty solid. His turnovers were down, and he didn't have a whole lot of help around him. His wide receivers were hurt all year long. Alshon Jeffrey couldn't stay on the field. Kevin White never got on the field. Guys like Eddie Royal were hurt on and off all year. So it seemed like every single week he had a different group of wideouts out there, and yet he played pretty solid. Now the question is, he lost Matt Forte, and who signed with the Jets, and Forte, while he missed a couple games too, you know, he's one of the most durable, most reliable options. You know, he's always going to be in the right spot, make the right plays, and he's gone. So at the running back position, the Bears are now going to be running, you know, probably a duo, maybe even a trio of young running backs out there that Cutler doesn't have a whole lot of experience with. So that's a big question mark, I think, on this offense. They also lost Martellus Bennett, too, who had some injury issues. But that's another pretty solid target that he loses in the offseason, and the tight end depth is a big question mark.
Yeah, it's funny. All the kind of premier positions there on the offensive side of the ball, there's questions about all of them. And especially at the wide receiver position, it's about health, where, as you mentioned, Alshon Jeffrey wasn't able to stay healthy all year. What is the health status of Kevin White right now?
Well, he's 100%, and he's out there looking pretty good. He's, you know, you can see the speed when he catches the football and runs with it, but he's never played an NFL game. So, you know, at least he gets that year under his belt of being in an NFL locker room and sitting in those meetings all year. He was there all last season and went through that on the mental side of it, but he's never had to go through the grind of an NFL season, an NFL training camp, and that's all going to be new to him. And we saw a little bit in OTAs, he struggled with drops. He had to be shown where he needed to be a couple times. So he still looks like a rookie out there. That's why I think it's so important for Alshon Jeffrey to put up a big year. And I, you know, right now he's franchise tagged. Technically, they're negotiating a long-term deal, but I don't know how far. You know, it doesn't seem like those conversations are going very well. I think he's going to end up playing under the tag. That if you're the Bears, while you risk losing him after the year, you also put him in a position where he needs to perform. And I think in terms of his production this year, that's actually a good thing because he's going to maybe have to play through some injuries that he refused to play through last year and still put up big numbers. So I think it's a big year for Alshon, and he's a big cog in his offense that's going to really determine how much success that this offense is able to have this year.
Adam Hoge joining us from WGN, Bears Insider for them, talking a little bit about the Chicago Bears and their upcoming season. You mentioned the fact that Matt Forte no longer a part of this offense as he's moved on from Chicago, and trying to replace him is obviously a big, big piece to replace. He's one of those guys where Jay Cutler feels like a guy who kind of locks in on one or two other of his options, and he's going to try to find them, get them the ball. Alshon Jeffrey's been one of those guys. Forte's been one of those guys for the last couple of years. How do you think the backfield shakes out? A lot of names back there with Langford, Kadeem Carey, Jacquizz Rodgers added to it. Obviously, Jordan Howard, the fifth-round pick out of Indiana with this football team as well. How does it shake out back there?
Well, I think it's up for grabs. You know, Langford really emerged as the exciting rookie last year, despite being a fourth-round pick out of Michigan State. He was able to have some decent performances when Matt Forte was hurt, but you know he's still not Matt Forte, and so to me they got worse at the running back position. Although I do understand not paying a 30-year-old running back $9 million guaranteed, I don't really have a problem with them letting him go from that standpoint. But you know it just leaves kind of a question mark here. It's going to be really interesting to watch, I think, in training camp and in the preseason how these guys are deployed, because I don't know that OTAs or minicamp really showed us anything in terms of the depth chart. It seemed pretty equal, and I think it's really a toss-up right now between Langford and Carey and Jordan Howard, probably those three guys, over who's going to be the number one guy. But we also know from John Fox's history that the number one and number two can be interchangeable. He likes to use two backs, and he has said that he's probably going to narrow it down to two guys on game day at least, and he's going to go with the hot hand from there. So one week it might be Langford getting the bulk of the carries. The next week it could be Kadeem Carey. The next week it could be Jordan Howard. It just depends. I think really how it shakes out in the preseason is going to determine a lot. And then, of course, you go through the injuries, and I'm not sure any of these guys are going to be as durable as Matt Forte has been over the years.
So basically what you're saying is don't draft any Bears running backs if you're doing a fantasy football team.
I would advise against that, which is if you've applied that rule to some of John Fox's teams in the past, maybe it's a waiver wire situation once we see how this thing stacks up, or at least wait until the last week of the preseason or right before the regular season to do your draft.
Is it bizarre for guys that cover the team there to look how much the fan base dislikes the greatest quarterback in their franchise's history?
Well, I actually think that that's completely overblown nationally. I think especially in the last few years that the Jay Cutler appreciation has grown here in Chicago. Now, that being said, there are definitely a percentage of Bears fans that are just anti-Cutler and are never going to get over it. But I think that the smart football fans that really have paid attention to his entire career and realize that he's actually a tough quarterback, that narrative that emerged after the NFC Championship game back in 2010 was completely wrong. Look, he's not a top quarterback in the league, but he's way better than, some of the other quarterbacks in the teams that can't find a quarterback. They would love to have Jay Cutler, I think. And I think that when we have this conversation, it seems like every year, what are the other options? There are no good other options. And look, if Jay can do what he did last year, which was not turn the ball over as much, run the offense, he is a smart quarterback, stay healthy, be smart with the football. And those are all question marks. Those are fair question marks. He's made plenty of mistakes throughout his career. But last year he showed that he can do it for an entire season. And if he can keep doing that, it's good enough for, I think, this offense to have some success. And by the way, guys, this defense, I think, is going to be a lot better this year.
And speaking of that defense, is Adam Hoge joining us from WGN, the Bears insider up there. A lot of new faces on that side of the ball, a lot of draft capital went into that side of the ball with first-round pick Leonard Floyd. I know Jonathan Bullard, a guy that a lot of people around here really liked coming out of the University of Florida, as well as a couple other guys on that side of the ball. They also add Danny Trevathan in free agency to the defense. How good do they expect to be on that side?
Well, I think first it's important to point out that they were much improved last year. And that's despite the fact that they had a lot of guys not really in the right scheme. I mean, they switched to a 3-4 defense with a 4-3 roster. And they had a lot of guys doing new things last year they'd never done before, and they somehow managed to be at least a middle-of-the-road defense, which was a very impressive coaching job by Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator. Now they've been able to turn over the roster a little bit more. They did what they did last year. And by the way, they weren't great last year by any means. They probably weren't even good, but they were much, much better than the 2 years before that under Mel Tucker, which were just an absolute disaster, two of the worst defenses in Chicago Bears history.
We know Mel well here.
Yeah, I know you guys do. It just did not go well. So, look, I thought the biggest weakness of the defense last year was up the middle, and they go out and they get Danny Trevathan and Jarrell Freeman, two guys who have, they weren't drafted. They weren't top draft picks, but they've gotten by in the league with pretty solid instincts, and that was something that this Bears defense lacked last season was instincts. I mean, Shane McClellan just did not have those instincts. They had Christian Jones in there a lot at inside linebacker as well. These were guys that just could not react in time to make the plays near the line of scrimmage. Everything was more 5-6 yards behind the line of the scrimmage. And so that is, I think, a major upgrade this year. Now, the question is, I think, on the defensive line, how good are they going to be? I think Eddie Goldman, you guys know out of Florida State, is going to make a big step forward in year two. They're pretty excited about him. They go out and they sign Akeem Hicks, so there's a veteran that should give you a boost too. But you guys mentioned Jonathan Bullard, who I think the Bears were very surprised was still there in the third round. And I think they're very excited about him. He's a guy who I believe will I wouldn't be surprised if he's starting week one. That's how much they like him. Now, we haven't seen a whole lot from him because they don't wear pads until training camp, and it's hard to really judge these guys until the pads go on. But there's a good chance that he's going to give a boost to the defensive line very quickly. And if all that happens, they have the outside linebackers. They have the pass rushers. The secondary's okay. It's good enough. And I think this defense will be much improved this season.
As we wrap things up here with you, Adam, John Fox has been successful everywhere he's been in the National Football League, whether it be as a coordinator or obviously as a head coach in both Carolina and Denver. What are the expectations for this Bears team going into the 2016 season?
Well, I think the fair expectations are just to see some kind of improvement and compete for a playoff spot, which they sort of did last year. I mean, they were kind of in the race after they went into Lambeau and beat the Packers on Thanksgiving night, which I'm sure you guys all remember that game. And then things just kind of fell apart. They just couldn't win the close games last year, and they didn't win at home. They were 1-7 at home. So all those things right there need improvement. And if they do, I think they're going to be in the mix for a playoff spot. I don't know that it's fair to expect them to make the playoffs. It's a tough division with the Packers and Vikings. You know those two teams are going to be good. I think the Lions probably take a step back this year. But it would not surprise me, though, if they do end up in the playoffs, but I think the fair expectations are just be there towards the end of the season, at least have some meaningful football games in week 16 and maybe even week 17.
All right, Adam, thank you very much for a few minutes of your time today. Hopefully we can catch up again, getting closer to that actual date with the Jaguars heading up there to Chicago. Thank you.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime.
All right, there he is, Adam Hoag, who covers the Bears for WGN up there. Kind enough to give us a few minutes of his time to talk a little bit about that Bears roster, and I thought it was a good question, Japs, about Jay Cutler and just the way that he is viewed by his fans up there in the city of Chicago. We got the fan feedback spotlight coming up next, as we'll be asking you today, with Japs being in studio here with me, outside of a Jaguars player, who's your favorite Jaguars follower? Who do you follow on social media? Who do you like the most on social media, outside of just following one of the players? We'll get to some of your answers here in just a moment. And I know you've been waiting for it, so it's time for us to go inside the mind of the Jaguars Twitter trickster here, Uncle Chaps, and try to figure out what exactly is his motivation for trying to get all you fools to retweet bad news. That is actually fake. We'll get into that as we continue along on a Metro Rooter Wednesday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field.
For more information, Adam, what more can you tell us here?
Well, Trey, in trying to verify these stories, as it turns out, sometimes some people get duped by fake accounts. And there were people here who got duped by a fake account. There's no deal with Jacksonville right now. It's still happening, unfolding as we speak. He's talking to the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's talking to the New York Giants. He's talking to other teams right now. They're going back and forth. There's no deal in place for Olivier Vernon. Let's be very clear about this. In a time of haste, a lot of people rushing around, somehow that got confused. We apologize for the mistake, and we'll keep you posted when Olivier Vernon does find a
Oh, free agency's a wonderland for guys like the guy sitting across from me. Uncle Chaps, was that your work?
Yes,
that
was
your
totally
work?
Me.
I kind of figured it was. I think I remember the tweet and seeing it and going, oh, and then, oh.
And that one was kind of different because usually when I do the fake account stuff, I'll leave it up for like maybe 5 minutes. And that one, something happened. My daughter had gotten sick and I had to go pick her up from daycare.
What do you mean by leave it up?
Like leave it up on Twitter or leave my profile picture as Ian Rappaport, Adam Schefter, Jay Glazer, or whomever it may be. But my daughter had gotten sick, so I had to go pick her up, and I had forgotten that I did the Jaguars tweet, and I got back home. It was like a 20-minute drive, and my phone started like blowing up, like getting so many text messages, and then people were like, turn on ESPN, dude. Like, and I logged into my Twitter account, and it had the little 100-plus sign, like if you do the web Twitter, 100-plus notifications, and I was like, okay, so that one took off a little bit. And
yeah.
Then I started getting clips of seeing Schefter's face when he had to basically apologize that sometimes they get duped, and
he was mad.
Oh my god, he looked like he had the fire of a thousand suns in his eyes.
There's no deal with Olivier Vernon in Jacksonville.
Man, you're Adam Schefter. Like, you should be only report your information, right? Like,
yeah.
Why are you even going to Twitter to find information about anything?
And
like
I don't
that?
Even blame Schefter. You know, he has thousands of people or a big old group of folks monitoring the tweets and everything. But it's just such a report first and figure it out later. And
you just want to be first.
Yeah, that's all they want.
That's all that matters is you want to be first, as if that's what anyone out there cares about, is whether Adam Schefter or Ian Rappaport, whoever got it first, I don't care. Just give me the information. But it's still so driven by that in that world. And it leads to the question, Chaps, that I'm sure you've had to answer 1,000 times at this point. But it's a simple one. Why? Why this? Why be the guy that's trying to kind of pull the wool over everyone's eyes, even if it is just for a few seconds?
I guess what you said earlier is kind of true, where it was like the 2015-16 version of a prank call. It was just funny to see the reactions to me, and a lot of it was because I was a 33-year-old college student sitting in a biology class that I couldn't care less about, and I was just bored. So most of my fake tweets happened during school hours, and I wasn't doing anything, and some dude was talking about rock formations, and I just did not care. So I wanted to entertain myself, and that makes 50-minute class periods go by fast.
So, I'm sure it does.
Yeah, and you know, it's actually given me an opportunity and platform, because some of those tweets have taken off and gained more followers and things like that, to talk about issues that I care about, like PTSD amongst veterans, and to go out and get help. And I got to go on ESPN in San Antonio and talk about Canines for Warriors here and the great job that they do. So even though it's joking, it gives me a platform to talk about the issues that are important to me and get my views out on actual serious issues.
Sure. And that's pretty awesome. That's something that's basically just you killing time in class. Could lead to something that is as serious and cool as that. I know, again, it's the question I got asked when we were going to be having you in here, that idea of why. You would want to do that thing. I've heard it discussed on these airwaves before. I've heard Frank Franchi going, why does anyone want to dupe anybody? Like, what purpose could that serve? And like you said, in my own head, I'm going, if you could have picked up the phone when you were 10 and there would be 1,000 people on the other side of that line when you're asking if their refrigerator's running, well, you need to go catch it. If you could have had that opportunity, no one wouldn't have done it. Right? Like,
right.
If you would have had the idea first, you would have been doing it too. It's like, I still Rickroll my friends. Like, there's just a joy in doing that kind of thing to somebody else, and I get that part of it. How focused on you are when you try to do something like that, how believable does it need to be? Like, are you worried about how believable the actual tweet is so it'll take off more, or what's the deal with that?
No. And I also want to say that it wasn't my idea. I was obviously wasn't the first one to do it.
No.
Like, Jaguars Twitter legends, too, like Dilla and Jay Noobs and Andy Willis, they did it before me. But
it makes free agency just hair-raising for those of us that just follow Jaguars Twitter.
Yeah, and I've found that if you make it a little bit more over the top, it's more likely to be repeated or retweeted fast, because you'll be like, okay, well, Olivier Vernon is signing for this god-awful contract, where if really you looked at it and they did sign Vernon for that, a lot of Jaguars fans would be like, man, that's a pretty ridiculous contract. And then the fact that the Giants went up and the offer, what they signed him for, was even more than what I thought would be a ridiculous number, and the number was even higher, that blew my mind. I was like, wait, is somebody getting me now? Is that right. What's going on? And I asked Ian Rappaport on my podcast, I was like, do you think that my fake tweet affected negotiations? And he was like, you never know, man. He's like, because they're in there talking with Giants guys, and you know they have ESPN on in their offices, and they see that come across it. That's the big offer that's happening. And he's like, there's no telling that it could have. And Tony Khan kind of had a cryptic tweet like, you're not helping us, chaps. So
that's amazing.
So I'm like, did I really just cost my team a pass? But if I didn't, who knows? Maybe we don't get Jack in the second round.
Right.
And I think that we would all rather have Miles Jack as a second rounder than that ridiculous contract that I had reported initially for Olivier Vernon.
Oh, what a world we live in.
And I even spelled Olivier wrong. I put it as Oliver.
Oliver Vernon.
Yeah.
Like, just what a world we live in, that a tweet meant to just kind of have fun for a couple of minutes could actually impact the amount of money that a player gets.
And I felt bad because I logged into Big Cat Country after I saw it, and people were like, I can't believe Chaps would do that to our own fan base. Like, he's supposed to be one of us. And I did feel kind of bad.
Was that the only one you've ever felt bad about? Was that
one? Was probably the only one. I mean, I didn't feel bad just because the overall reaction was huge, but I did feel bad that I had set Jaguar fans up for some sadness, because we've had our own pets for plenty of years now.
No doubt.
But Jay Glazer was funny about that tweet, because he said, it's odd that the first time that ESPN actually credits me with a report is one that's not even mine.
That's such great stuff. That's so great.
Chaps, do you find that after you report these things that the actual insiders themselves reach out to you and say, like, hey, who are your sources, or who are you, I guess?
Yeah, that's actually how I came to know Ian Rappaport, because I got that one. It was the Alex Smith report, and I got the numbers in years within like $3 million.
On a guess, right? You just
threw out numbers. Straight guess. I was just messing with some of my Chiefs buddies, and the numbers came out, and they were almost exactly right on that day. And there had been no like speculation that Smith was going to sign. So it came out of nowhere. And guys out of Dallas, like the Dallas Morning News and the Kansas City, they were like crediting me with the report that Alex Smith had signed. So Ian had reached out and asked for my email address. So he was like, who are your actual sources? And then I got the Harbaugh numbers right.
Uh-huh.
And the day that Harbaugh was going to sign with Michigan, I got that one right too. So those kind of happened around the same time, and people were just like, what is going on here?
Was that one of those two? Like you said, you don't necessarily worry about being accurate. Were you trying to throw out some absurd number? And they just turned out to hit?
I just knew that it made sense. Somebody had actually told me there was an actual source for the Harbaugh one. They had told me that he was up there and that they had opened a line of accounting for $5 million from The Athletic. And I was like, okay, well, there's only one guy that's going to get that number.
Sure.
And it's going to be Harbaugh. And so I put two and two together. The last day of the season's on Sunday. He's probably going to talk to the 49ers, talk to his family, and then his press conference will be on Wednesday. So I said that he had agreed in principle the press conference is going to be at this time, which is the normal time to have it, like 2 o'clock Eastern time. And those things came true. And so people just thought, I mean, there's a lot in sports that is kind of common sense. You know, like if you think about it, it's just really common sense. And that's what the fake tweeting of Adam Schefter really showed, because he gave reasonings why and what the process was for the Jaguars to get Vernon to sign. And you could just see it on live TV that everything you were saying is completely made up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And let's not dupe the Jaguars fans anymore, all right?
I'm retired from that. No more fake tweets, football-related, for me.
I don't know if I believe it.
I might get bored again.
Like,
you never know.
He looked me right in the eyes when he said it, and I still don't believe you.
Well, I think about 2 weeks ago, I saw a tweet from yourself, Chaps, that said you were retired from the parody or fake tweet game.
No. Football fake tweet. I'm all about the politics this offseason.
So we won't see any fake Brock Osweiler tweets or anything like that. It's just no football at all?
Yeah, no football fake parodies.
Mm. At least until the election's over?
Or at least until I'm bored.
Okay.
I mean, if Michael Jordan and Brett Favre can come out of retirement, anybody can.
Oh, yeah.
There's enough political content out there for you to have some fun, chaps.
Oh, no doubt.
Well, they've kept it live this political season, there's no doubt.
It's hard for Donald Trump to do it because some of the tweets are so ridiculous. Like, I can't even think some of the stuff that's so... Everything's believable.
Yeah, try to troll Donald Trump. Go ahead. Everybody out there, try to come up with some way to troll Donald Trump and some of the things he thinks.
Just throw some ridiculous stuff and then put sad with an exclamation point at the end and you got it.
Considering we have two political candidates running for president where I think one of them, their disapproval rating is something like 72%. The other one's like 58%. Nobody likes anybody.
Just got to get a 50.
Yeah.
Somebody just gets a 50 and you win it.
Nobody likes anybody. Well, thank you so much, Chaps, for coming in and joining us today. And before we walk out the door here, we always ask players if they want to give a kind of a message to the fan base out there who's listening to the program, and you kind of represent the fan base here for us as we're doing the fan spotlight a little bit with Uncle Chaps in here. So the message for the fans out there, the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Well, I know this is a military community, so for all you guys that are back from your war zones, if you're struggling with PTSD, it doesn't show weakness to admit it and go seek help. Go out there and seek help. Call somebody. DM me on Twitter. Go to your VA. Reach out to Military One Source. Get help. There's plenty of people. 21 veterans kill themselves every single day because of PTSD and traumatic brain injury. Don't be one of those numbers. And if you know one of your buddies is hurting, we didn't leave them on the battlefield for them to come home and take their own life.
At Uncle Chaps. So if you do want to reach out and get in touch and you are someone who's suffering with that kind of thing, there is help out there. And I think it's important. Again, we are a military community and we try to support those guys as much as we can. And we shouldn't forget them when they come back home. That's for sure. So if you want to reach out to Uncle Chaps, I'm sure you can get them in touch with the people they need to be put in touch with. And that's a cool thing, man. And I appreciate you coming in for a couple hours talking Jaguars football. I hope it was fun for you as well.
Oh, yeah, man. Appreciate the invite.
Absolutely. As we say goodbye to Uncle Chaps, we'll welcome in the boys of the Midday Chalk. So for Tyler Devitt, for Chaps, for Mike Dempsey on vacation, I'm Fat Tony. Back with you tomorrow on a Thursday edition. T-Wig will be joining us tomorrow.
There it is.
Here for Jaguars Today. The boys of Midday Chalk, I think T-Wig's here right now, coming in next here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.